This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And good morning, welcome back to Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, January 15th, 2025. Can you believe the new year is 2 weeks old already? Coming up in just a few moments here, we'll get the forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We'll visit with Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro on violence prevention efforts, a new one from Governor Tony Evers. Not Governor Jim Doyle, as apparently I said right before the break. Thank you to Luann and Wanderoos for catching that and sending me a text message about that. Tomorrow on the program, we will have State Senator Jody Habersinnigan, a brand new legislator, talking about her first week or so in office, as well as Assembly Representative Tara Johnson from the La Crosse area. Let's see. Tony up in Ashland writes in on YouTube, feels like 11 below. Who is going outside and judging the weather? Which takes us to Rob from Tigerton and Brittany Merlot, where Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's clear and 5 below. The wind chill 15 below. Yesterday, I went on a road trip to find a stronger booster for my TV in Waupaca. Visited my friend Robin in Iola, who is the head librarian, who I haven't seen in 10 years. Had pizza and Rosholt. And then took some sunset pictures, so it was a relaxing day. I remember my dad telling me that it snowed the night after Super Bowl I, a game carried by CBS and NBC, the only Super Bowl that was carried by two networks, because they didn't call it Super Bowl I. They were, well, that and that, nobody thought that game meant anything. It was the NFL team against an AFL team, and nothing's ever going to come of that. You know, the Super Bowl, that's not a thing nowadays, is it? That's long since been forgotten. Is it a multi-billion dollar jolt to the economy, you know?
Where you can't call it that. You just call it the big game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you can't.
Was it called the Super Bowl from the start, or did they name it down the road?
It was the AFL-NFL championship game for like the first 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Either the second or third year, somebody came up with, hey, there's the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Cotton Bowl. This is Super. And Super kind of stuck. So I'm glad they picked a good one. You know, they didn't call it like the really nice bowl or something like that.
The Football Bowl.
Yes, Football Bowl. And so here we are. Hey, it's nothing we have to worry about. And by the way, I want credit from all my friends who are Vikings fans. I said and did nothing yesterday to rub any salt in the wound. I did have lunch with a Vikings fan, and they're taking it hard. I mean, it's not like we weren't bothered, Brittany, to be eliminated, but you know, we knew we were playing a team that was really on a tear, whereas the Vikings, they really thought this was their year, and they just are crushed again.
Yeah,
pardon me for a minute. Pardon me just a moment. Okay, I'm better now.
Vikings and Bears fans, their hope is adorable.
I know. Yes.
I do feel bad for them, but
I said to her, it's like, well, now we can all root for the Lions. They haven't won since 1957. Her response wasn't anything I can say on the radio, but apparently no, she's not rooting for the Lions. So
go Lions. Lions.
That's right.
Lions.
Brittany, we're just trying to avoid talking about being well below zero again. And this is such a weird thing. You told us about it yesterday, and I'm still trying to adjust to the fact that we're way below zero. We're going to get much warmer, and then we're going to get even colder in very short order. This is quite the little whipsaw we're on.
Yeah, it really is. So hold on tight. Here we go. We're already at the coldest temperatures we felt so far of this cold snap. Now, there's no wind chill factored in. The actual temperatures are 17 below zero right now into Hayward and 12 above zero at Washington Island. So a lot of people below zero up north into the single digits down south. We are going to see beautiful sunshine to start the day, clouds increasing throughout the afternoon, and a shot of snow. Yes, we have light, widespread snow moving in this evening. So it'll move into northwest areas probably afternoon, pushing in towards Wausau and central Wisconsin around 4 o'clock, and then becoming widespread statewide probably around 7. So that'll wind down overnight. We're looking at about a half an inch across the state, and some areas up north into the Northwoods could see around 1 to maybe 2 inches or so. But overall, the cold does come back after a nice little warm up. So today's highs, we hit the upper teens to low 20s. Then tomorrow, we're going to climb into the low to mid 30s. Then for Friday, we're hitting mid 30s to low 40s across the state. And then Saturday, that cold front pushes through and we drop. Highs will be in the teens to low 20s. And it gets even worse. Like Pat had said, Sunday, we don't get above zero into the Northwoods. And down south, you're only going to hang out into the single digits. And that cold snap has a grip on us into early next week, too. So a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, no kidding. And the problem is we played Pitbull in the last segment. And I really want you to give this forecast with that music behind you, talking about how the temperatures are going to drop. And then a couple of days, it'll feel like it's going to the top. And then
I don't know
your Pitbull stylings, but I want to hear it. I want you to practice that for us. So
I will practice.
We'll cue that music up. Let's see. One note here quick from Robin Tigerton, who says it was Lamar Hunt, the late owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, who saw his daughter playing with one of those Super Bowls, those little rubber Super Bowls, and created the Super Bowl name. Now, Rob, I have no idea if you're joshing with us or not, but, you know.
I call shenanigans on that story.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Today is National Wikipedia Day. So guess where we're going next?
The
internet, where there's nothing's not true on the internet. You know, we'll just go look it up there. All right, Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
All right, a couple of quick sports notes here. The Milwaukee Bucks beat Sacramento 130 to 115. Giannis had his 50th career triple-double along the way. The Badger men's basketball team extended their winning streak to 6 by beating Ohio State last night 70 to 68. That's now 4 in a row. They've won in the Big Ten Conference, so they're 4-2 now. The basketball team heads to the West Coast. They'll play at USC on Saturday and at UCLA on Tuesday. The Marquette men's basketball team outlasted DePaul 85-83 to go to 6-0 in the Big East. So there's a little sports update for you now at 7:13. And I'm joined now by Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro to talk about some of the things happening at the state capitol where the legislature began its new session last week. Elizabeth, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Trying to stay warm.
Yes, I know. If folks haven't seen Elizabeth's reports, she'll do these video reports, these explainers about things that are in the news. And sometimes she's indoors, and sometimes she'll put herself outdoors so that, things don't get stale. Just show some of the beautiful scenery of Wisconsin. But you're bundled up more than ever on some of these things. And one of these days, I expect to get a note from you going, "I tried to do this video, and my phone froze." So, occupational hazard, I guess.
Well, I'm just thankful that Christina knitted a beautiful scarf for Christmas, which has helped add another layer when I have stepped outside.
Christina Laurie made these scarves, knitted these. I was so surprised to get one from her. And it's beautiful and it is thick and it does the trick on a day like this. So we are very fortunate to have that from her. So let's talk about the newest initiative first in the legislature, because in the last hour, I talked about how the assembly approved the voter ID constitutional referendum. So that'll be on the ballot in April. And so if you want to listen back, go over to civicmedia.us, go to the Up North News radio show page, and you can always listen back to previous programs and previous hours. So you can find out what the assembly talked about yesterday. But Governor Tony Evers also did something yesterday. He signed an executive order to try to do something about violence in our communities. And obviously there was a lot of good intention behind there, but you wouldn't know it from talking to the state's most powerful Republican. So Elizabeth, with that, set up the rest of the description of what Governor Evers wants to do.
Yeah, Governor Evers announced yesterday that he is directing $10 million in federal funds. I believe this is getting to be the last of ARPA or federal pandemic aid funds that the state received, that he is allocating to create an Office of Violence Prevention. And I have to say, this was quite the laundry list of reasoning why he is doing this. And the stats were absolutely overwhelming when I first was diving into this. But basically, the Cliff Notes version is in the wake of the most recent school shooting. You know, we've had an increase in school shootings in recent years, but this is just the latest example that, you know, the governor is kind of saying enough is enough. We need to do something to address gun violence and help protect Wisconsinites of all ages. And so he is directing this federal money to create an Office of Violence Prevention. And the office is really going to be, as I understand it, a little bit of a hub to direct funds to local law enforcement officials, implement domestic violence prevention programs, and even include some funds for school districts to enhance gun safety training and suicide prevention, firearms training, all of these things, all aimed at keeping kids, elders, people across the state safe.
Really, just it's going at the root causes of these things before you need police, before you need the sheriff's office, before you need the coroner, frankly, to be candid about it. There are so many different ways that you can address the things that lead to violence. And yet, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, based on the audio that you gathered from him when he was asked about the governor wanting to create this Office of Violence Prevention, you've got the Assembly Speaker thinking the answer is more police. Give a listen to Speaker Voss.
Do you know what the most effective violence prevention office is? The police. So I think what we need to do is to increase funding for our police and public safety services, not create a whole bunch of touchy-feely bureaucrats that are going to go around wasting time, wasting money, and certainly not putting the effort where it deserves, which is to lock people up who commit a crime and make sure that the victims have the services that they need.
So I'm going to add as an editorial, no. The speaker couldn't be no more wrong. More police is not the most effective violence prevention effort. It's to address those root causes, not to have an armed cop standing on every corner or locking people up. Locking people up means they've already committed the crime. The Assembly Speaker is telling you he'd rather wait till the crime is committed and then lock people up and not do anything about it from a safety standpoint, an education standpoint, a nutrition standpoint, everything else that goes along with it. So Elizabeth's going to have more audio from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss coming up in just a moment. And we'll talk more about what's happening at the state capitol. And then in our second half hour, Paul Hambleton will join us. And we'll talk a bit about how when candidates come up short at election time, the last thing they should do is walk away. Their community still needs them more than ever. So that and so much more still ahead wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Wednesday morning. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Mr. Worldwide to infinity, you know the roof on fire. We gon' boogie, oogie, oogie, jiggle, wiggle, and dance like the roof on fire.
This would be one Armando Perez. You know him as Pitbull, and he turns 43 today. And you can catch our history lesson every morning at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. We are visiting with Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro about a proposal from Governor Tony Evers to create an office on violence prevention. And it's not often that I would direct people to go and read a politician's press release. But there's far more in this announcement than we could possibly cover in a couple of short segments here about gun deaths, about the other things that can lead to gun deaths, not just crime, but things like trigger locks to reduce the chance of accidental deaths. There's domestic violence that's in here, a host of things that if you were to go to the governor's website, and I'm sure would be able to find in short order, and look for all the ways that you've got police training, community safety projects, and much more. And he's funding this, the governor is, for 2 years with $10 million in federal pandemic relief funds. And so Elizabeth set up a bit about what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had to say, and then As you might expect, I probably have a comment about that as well. But lead us into the way that the governor is taking the initiative on funding these things.
Well, you know, Governor Evers has tried previously to take some action when it comes to violence prevention and gun safety, right? But in light of the Abundant Life school shooting in December, and I'm personally taking this as Governor Evers is just looking at the need for expediency here. And so he is allocating $10 million in federal funds to create this new Office of Violence Prevention. But he did signal that we can expect a request for funding, a little bit more permanent funding for this office. We see his budget proposal next month. But Robin Voss had a little bit of a difference in opinion on that.
I think it's fair to say that the Assembly will not be supporting that money. And again,
this is the problem with not having any oversight, or Governor Evers gets to use this like his personal checkbook.
Now, again, this is the political dispute ongoing between the legislative Republicans and Governor Evers. Governor Evers, governors across the country had unilateral control over how to allocate federal pandemic relief funds. And Governor Evers has done that and continues to do that. It's why Wisconsin had one of the healthiest economic recoveries of all the states. Meanwhile, the Assembly and the Senate did nothing to allocate state funds for things. And so now you've got Voss saying that Evers is using this like a personal checkbook. The answer would be pretty simple. Work with the governor on things that would help keep the public safe. So Elizabeth will continue to follow that story. But Elizabeth, the speaker was also asked about one aspect of reducing gun deaths, and that would be background checks.
That's right. Governor Evers has also designated this year as the year of mental health. So he's, governor, as I take it, is looking at, as you said, Pat, looking at the whole picture and not just looking at the aftermath, right? And one of those things when you're looking at the whole picture is funding background checks. But again, Robin Voss had a little bit of difference of opinion.
We have already done additional background checks. We passed that in the Assembly, I think it was either last session or the time before, to make sure it goes through every possible database. I have no problem making sure that criminals are not able to access firearms, but I also want to make sure that if people have not committed a crime, that they are not artificially held back from legally attaining a firearm to protect themselves. Again, only in a bureaucracy do we think that having more government involved is going to make people either more free or more safe.
And again, this is classic Robin Voss, that anything that is done proactively by government to help make things better, to help keep people safer, is somehow more government. And in this case, he says he doesn't want criminals to access firearms. Well, that's exactly what he should want, Elizabeth. If I'm not mistaken, the support for universal background checks, no gun show loopholes, and red flag laws have something like, depending on the range, 70 to 90% support. These are things the public wants our elected leaders to do.
Exactly. And I think, school shootings have laid out that exact example, that as a student getting a gun without a background check, I think there's a little bit of a gap there.
Yeah, you're not going to find that the student has committed a crime, and the first crime they commit is a school shooting. And so, again, you have especially the debate over red flag laws, where the reason some lawmakers oppose them is saying, well, this is government coming in and take guns for people. And it clearly shows they don't understand how red flag laws work. With a red flag law situation, if somebody's concerned that somebody may be a danger to themselves or others, they can take that to a judge. A judge has to hold a hearing. There has to be evidence. If the evidence is clear that this person does have some mental incapacities or is otherwise a danger, yes, then that person's guns can be taken temporarily until that person shows and demonstrates that they're no longer a threat. Again, widespread public support, but as you can hear from the Assembly Speaker, not in the Republican-led Wisconsin Assembly and the Wisconsin Senate. Elizabeth, you're going to come back tomorrow and talk with us. I believe, did I hear we're going to go to the Senate Republican side now. And we're talking, believe it or not, I think we're talking about another attempt at an abortion ban.
That's right. Devin LeMahieu was on Upfront this past weekend and had a lot to talk about with priorities and looking ahead to this upcoming, or I should say not upcoming anymore, we're in it, but this new legislative session.
And so amazingly, he's talked about a potential abortion ban, even though the case is still tied up in court. And even though last I checked, Tony Evers is still the governor who has vetoed around a dozen attempts to limit abortion before. But Elizabeth will be back tomorrow to talk a bit more about what the Senate Republican leader has to say about that. Elizabeth, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat.
All right. So give a listen for that. And Melissa Kay will be back tomorrow as well in the first half of the 7 a.m. hour as we talk about some of the week's top state headlines. And then tomorrow at 7:30, we have new State Senator Jody Habesh-Sinikin and new State Representative Tara Johnson joining us to talk about their perspective on the legislature. And of course, it being Thursday, tomorrow we will have Joe Sopecki at 6:30. But Paul Hamilton is going to join us next. We're going to talk about campaigning and the need for people to step up their civic engagement year-round on their school boards and all kinds of ways that they can continue to serve their community. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Ronnie Van Zant of Lynyrd Skynyrd, born 77 years ago today, but lost way too early back in 1977. It is just about 7:35 on this Wednesday morning, January 15th, 2025, and I'm happy to be joined by Paul Hamilton up in St. Croix County. We're going to talk a bit about civic engagement, staying involved in your community, maybe running for office, and hey, maybe you fall short in your run for office, but that doesn't mean you should be walking away. First, let me tell you that you can subscribe to our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner. We have an article there about Wisconsin's best women-owned breweries and who helps those to support and thrive, and an article on how to lower your energy bill under President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. So again, head to upnorthnewswi.com to learn more. Paul Hamilton, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great today.
Nice to see you here. And tell you what, behind you in St. Croix County, there is a voluminous set of bookshelves. But of course, it was Tony up in Ashland who caught the fact that there's also several guitars behind you. So we're going to talk about the role of live music in politics as well at some point here. But before we get into the notion of civic engagement, especially by people who fall short running for office, let's talk about your own history. You were a candidate this past year.
Yes. I've been politically involved all my life and my career and different things, but and working with St. Croix County Democratic Party. I'm retired now. I'm a retired educator. The opportunity came up in the run-up to the last election that we were looking for candidates. And it eventually, my role as party chair was helping to do that and look for candidates. And it eventually kind of came around to me, came back in my face, like, Paul, you know everybody up there, so maybe you should run. And I hadn't really thought of myself as a candidate, but more as somebody who's politically active. I made the decision, you know, based on folks talking to me that, okay, let's do that. It was a tough race. I knew going into the to the race, that even though it was a after redistricting, that I live here in a very conservative area, St. Croix County. And then when you look at the new Senate District 10, it now swings south instead of north. So it doesn't go up to Polk and Burnett. That's what it used to do. Heads south. It goes down into Buffalo, Trempealeau, Pepin County, very rural parts of the Driftless area here in Wisconsin. And Jeff Smith, actually, who we know there in Eau Claire, had a portion of that. But it was new for me, and it was new for my opponent as well, who served in for the last two terms in Senate 10. So it seemed like a real opportunity, and it was. And I really can't say enough about how much I learned, how many people I talked to, the new friendships that I built during the race. It was really an extraordinary, I would even say life-changing experience. But I'm an older guy, so how much change can you take, you know? But it was truly an amazing. It obviously was disappointing in the end for a number of reasons, but I wasn't surprised. We didn't move the dime a lot. It's 60-40, you know, 60 Republican, 40%, if you kind of model it out. But, you know, in the end, for me, that didn't matter. I think the experience still helped give people hope.
And there was, by the way, there was something functional about that. And yeah. I know some people don't like to hear this when we talk about underdog races. But yeah. Sometimes you just know that you're in a district that is lopsided. And by the way, this works both ways. The point I'm making is to never leave an empty line on the ballot. And that sometimes even a good soldier like a county party chair has to take one for the team, put your name up on the ballot there, because every name that's on there gives somebody more reason to vote, bring somebody in who might not otherwise come in were it not due to your candidacy. And that's a few more votes for Tammy Baldwin, or that's a few more votes for your congressional candidate. You're a few more votes for everybody else on the ballot. Whereas if you leave a blank space on the ballot, I mean, it's truly that you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And so it really says something about party strength when somebody is willing to step up and do this.
Exactly right. Because I think you give people hope. I mean, that's the thing. I was told that, and witnessed it. I had a lot of folks come up to me and say, thank you for running. We're very grateful you're doing this. You're getting our, you're talking about the things that I care about. And
you never know when there's going to be some kind of a wave. When I was elected in 2006 to the state Senate, that was a wave year. There were districts primarily in southwest Wisconsin that a Democrat had not won those seats in 100 years. And Democrats won. And, granted, they may have only served one or two terms, but for a time there were people who had representation that really was more in line with their values and their needs, once you step apart from the campaign ads. So, Paul, as somebody who has recruited candidates, has been there yourself, you've got people right now who are running for things like, seats on school boards, and they do come up short. You and I both know the frustration of seeing good people run good races, they lose, and then they basically disappear. They walk away. And I'm glad to have somebody else on the show saying, don't do that. There are definitely multiple roles that you can still play in your community.
Yes, that's right. I certainly already have found, I think people have to take a break in a sense. It's exhausting. It's one of the, it was like going back to work. For me, as a retired guy, it's going back to work and not getting paid and spending, 14 to 16 hours a day. It's a lot of work. So you're exhausted at the end of a race. And I think that's not a good time to make decisions. You need to allow yourself and your family and your friends to all process it. And we did that very deliberately this time around after the race, and really spent a lot of time thinking and talking with folks, folks that helped me in the campaign, about just take care of yourself. You sleep, you enjoy your grandkids, and you spend some time, and then, I think it's, what do I do next? And it, I think candidates and what I want to do next is take what I learned and move it forward. I think we give up the opportunity to build on what we did. When you go through a campaign, you make lots of new friends, you make lots of connections, you meet party leaders in other counties, and it becomes a powerful thing, regardless whether you win or lose that election. What you're really doing is building capacity toward the next election. So if people quit, if they say, I'm done, I'm out of here, they're walking away with a whole treasure of experience that would be valuable moving forward. Whether I run again or not, I now can bring, I thought I knew how to, help people in campaigns. And then I ran a campaign.
It's a different perspective, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a different perspective.
Well, and here's the thing. It's sometimes where you end up is not where you thought you were going. You may run for, a state senate or assembly seat, and then 6 months or a year down the road, somebody resigns from the local school board, for example, or some other post, and there's either a special election or an appointment, and you may be the natural, logical choice to fill that particular spot. But there's also roles in advocacy, and I know in your case you have a particular passion for advocacy for education. And if people have learned nothing from this program, is that there's no shortage of groups that are looking to advocate for their favorite causes, and that might be the next role that they play.
Exactly so, and I think you've had some of your material has been about public education and public school funding. As an educator, that to me was near and dear to my heart, what's happening to our public schools. And that's what really drove me into running for office, is that I do have practical, real life experience as a teacher, as an educator, as an advocate for public education. I'll be frank, I think public education is a foundation of our democracy. And it's in trouble right now. Our legislature, and across the country, but our legislature right now, we can pop off a few things like, why do we have, almost $5 billion budget deficit or budget surplus at the state level, while 80% of our school districts are going to referendum, for basic needs to raise property taxes. These things are facts that really belie what a struggle now it is for public education in our state. And that was my passion. But of course, I led to a lot of other things. I learned a lot about water, about what's happening in our in agriculture right now. Real fan of a local food, and I think most people are. They want to know where their food came from. They want to know it's clean. They want to know the water is clean. So some of those issues that I'd been aware of, they really came to the front for me as people told me about it. Mm-hmm. I'd say the other thing is the door knocking. My God, I knocked on a couple thousand doors. Mm-hmm. I talked to a whole lot of conservative people at the same time, and I had some really wonderful conversations with folks and learned a lot about concerns that they may have that leans towards a conservative angle. I ended up kind of calling myself a dirt road Democrat because it's a very rural form of being a Democrat, quite different than living in a metropolitan area. Where in rural Wisconsin, communities are very tight. It's kind of the old saw about you walk into the bar and everybody stops and looks at you because they know you're the stranger. That is rural Wisconsin. I spent my life here. It's a different way of campaigning, and have a lot to say about that in the future.
It was without a doubt my favorite part of being a legislative candidate and a legislator was going door to door and meeting folks. And now again, we're in a day and an age where a few people, see things like, their once and future president acting, like a doorknob and deciding they have permission to act like a doorknob. But that was such a sliver of a percentage of everybody else who couldn't have been nicer couldn't have been more polite, even when we disagreed. I love that you mentioned the phrase dirt road Democrat. It reminds me that one of our first guests on the show was a woman in Missouri, Jess Piper, who came to coin that term. And we've got to get her back on the show as well, because, again, as we've talked about over and over again on this program, when it comes to investing in rural America and rural Wisconsin, you know, the people who are doing that most are not the ones who are always talking about cutting the budget, because those budget cuts are hurting rural areas more. But they got to hear this at the doors, not just in a bunch of slick political ads. So I would imagine for you, you know, we're only 2 months or so past the last election, but I know you're probably already thinking ahead to 2026. I know Dr. Kristen Lierley's already talked to some of the legislative candidates in Northeast Wisconsin. Some have already committed to running in 2026, or at least staying active until then. I'm sure those same conversations are happening out by you.
They are indeed. And, you know, we have kind of the cycle of elections right now. We have obviously the spring election that's coming up April 1st, very, very important for a number of reasons, not least of which, of course, is our Supreme Court race. But there are lots of municipal and school board and some referendums that are coming up right here in Hudson. We're going back to referendum. We just found this out, but we're going back to referendum for operating costs for a school district. So there's so much to do. But I think it's looking ahead to the midterms, November of 2026. You know, everything we do now builds to that. And so let's focus on local, state. We'll keep track of what's happening in Washington. But that judgment day comes on November of 2026. And we have to keep that in mind, that as we're working on county races, school board races, let's start getting ready for that one.
Paul Hamilton from St. Croix County. Hey, it was great catching up with you, Paul. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for all that you do. Appreciate it very much. Todd Alba is up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Okay, one more for Pitbull's birthday along with Kesha there on this Wednesday morning, 8 minutes till 8 o'clock. And one Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show, if he's overcome the technological gremlins, will be joining us. Mr. Alba, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yes,
how are you?
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Yes.
Better now. You know,
resplendent in your Badger red. After that nice victory over Ohio State.
Greg Dard, 200 wins, baby. I was there last night. It was a great game. A nail biter, losing what little hair I have left. But it was they won. So
is that a Wisconsin Badgers hat or a Wario hat?
Thank you very much for asking, Greg Bach. You know, I have on the jersey, on the hoodie, I have, the Motion W installed by Barry Alvarez in the early 90s. But my hat is a vintage Motion W, from I'll mess it up. But I think this is a W from like 1940s.
Gotcha.
I like the clean lines and the logo. So I'm combining ages of the University of Wisconsin.
You're bringing together generations. You're bringing together the generations.
Yes, that's it. And even though I am not a graduate, I was never smart enough to get into UW-Madison, I live vicariously through my two godsons, which are both proud graduates of the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
But it is bridging jet, because that's a serious video game hat there, right there, Greg, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. Right? It reminds me of Wario from Super Mario Brothers. But, you know, hey, man.
Yeah.
I like it.
It kind of is a little bit.
Go Badgers.
Different strokes. Hey, I want to...
It'll look like Super Mario. My God, if I don't try to stop eating sweet for the holidays. Go ahead.
I want to end the show as I began with a story that I found particularly disturbing, and I don't know if you'll pick up on it or others will as well, but it came from my old TV station, WEAU in Eau Claire. about how several law enforcement agencies have been caught using Eau Claire as a dumping ground, picking up homeless or mentally ill people who have not committed a crime, taxiing them to Eau Claire and dumping them on the streets against their will. And that while St. Croix County, or was it Menominee, was like, oh, we're sorry, we won't do that again. Others like the Durant Police Department were like, well, we're not sorry, and we're going to continue to do that. Which, to me, it's like the reason we're at this point is that you had governors in Texas and Florida that were basically engaged in human trafficking, you know, with taking undocumented immigrants and busing them or flying them across the country. And look, politicians will do stunts like that. We should expect better from local law enforcement than to be doing something like this. Just my two cents.
Yeah, I had not seen the story. I had not seen the story, so I'll have to take a look.
Well, the point I wanted to make with you on that was that these smaller police departments and sheriff's offices, granted, they may not have as many resources as some of the larger cities, but let's remember why that is. It's the people who actually love to talk about defunding the police. The ones defunding the police are the very Republican legislators who are squeezing municipal budgets so that you end up not having the resources that you need for law enforcement, for mental health, for, you know, health care and all of that. It comes back to you can say you back the blue, but do you really?
Yeah, I agree very much with that. I mean, we talked a little bit about our show. We spent 90 minutes actually on Mr. Schimmel and him trying to say that he thought that the January 6th convicts, you know, got a raw deal out in Washington, D.C. And I find it more than ironic that he's decided, you know, he's running for the highest court in the land and says that he doesn't believe in the court system. And, you know, I think about all the Capitol Police officers that were attacked and some ended up dying because of the result of their injuries on January 6th, and Schimmel doesn't want to back them. So, yeah, I think it's sad irony. In this case, I think to your point, you know, Pat, as someone who spent a couple of terms on local city council and actually was the chair of the Police and Fire Commission for Richland Center, I think we need to start looking at why this happened. You know, is it a couple of, you know, yahoos in the department, or is it actually the chief or the village or city making these decisions to take people who are homeless and dropping them off in Eau Claire? As you know, I mean, Eau Claire has a pretty good, healthy shelter downtown, not too far from our friends at Shift Coffee. And there have been, you know, problems there, but they also do a lot of good. And I think it goes back to what you said earlier, which is we have a $4 billion surplus right now in this state. And, you know, I would like to see programs where Democrats can sit down with Republicans and say, we'll do the photo op, and then we're going to go into the Senate parlor or the Assembly parlor or 411 South or wherever and close the doors. And we're actually going to talk about real solutions and stop posturing on both sides about spending millions of dollars to have a program so it looks like we're fixing something to score political points with our base. And that's what's frustrating me right now. And this appears to be a case where real money should be spent to actually help local communities to provide. When it's 20 below, people cannot be on the street. It's simply unhealthy. And we should have appropriate funds to make sure that we have proper shelters and the people who are staffing those are also protected.
Yeah. I mean, you said it all perfectly, succinctly. And you're going to hear more of this wisdom from one Todd Alba coming up at noon today on the Todd Alba Show. What a convenient name for him. Todd, thank you so much, as always, for the insight. Have a great day. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Greg Bach is back at 10 a.m. for Matt and Air on Air.
As well. Take care.
Thank you.
Anything special for Matt and Air on Air today?
We got Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau talking about scams to look out for in 2025 at 10:30 this morning.
All right. And then tomorrow on this program, State Senator Jody Habersinikin, new State Representative Tara Johnson, also Joe Zepecki and Luke Mathers on this Thursday. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Remember, you can stay up to date with all we do through our daily newsletter. Click subscribe over at upnorthnewswi.com or follow us on social media. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday. Have a wonderful day. We will see you tomorrow morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.